Welcome to the Sage of Three Paths podcast. We are three brothers who use this space to talk about a range of topics, anything from politics, race, anime, and pop culture, each giving our own perspectives and opinions. I'm the youngest, Mo Janna, also known as Junior Lab.
I'm the oldest, Okello, but my brothers call me AJ.
Middle child, Oz, aka Wizard King.
We three brothers.
One sec. We once again thank you for tuning in and joining us on this sometimes cathartic journey. Let's dive right in.
Who did you stain when you went the first time? So, do you know what? I travelled both times. Mm-hmm. So I did the drive. The first time I went, I couldn't drive in the States. I don't know what the reason for that was, but I didn't drive. I did the travel from one place to another, which would have been something ridiculous, like 23 hours or whatever. But the second time I went, I knew that I wanted to recreate that journey with G, who at the time was going to, we were just dating. We got engaged in the States. So I did that journey to her. And the one thing I remember thinking when I did it the first time was, this is absolutely amazing. It's amazing you can just get in a car and drive for that long and not be at your destination.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, growing up in England, the UK, it's tiny. It's so tiny. So to experience something like that, it just kind of blew me away. And I knew I wanted to do that with G. So I took her on the same journey, but this time I drove as well, which was quite crazy because obviously it's the other side of the road. So that was weird. At one point, I was driving on the wrong side of the road, and I had like an uncle and an auntie in the car. Hey, go, go, go. I was so confused. I was like, who let me drive this car? the States was great, and coming from a big family was great. But at the same time, I feel like growing up in the UK, predominantly with mum's family, we didn't spend... Because most of your family, dad, is in the States or in across Africa or across the world. But with mum, it was mum, grandma. And when mum and dad split up, we predominantly was growing up in mum's circle of family. So it was more compact, which is why perhaps that we prefer that. Like, I do love that big craziness of loads of family and whatnot, but I do love that small compact as well. So for me, it's not like one's better than the other. I'm quite pleased that we're lucky enough to have both.
Yeah, 100%.
We're lucky enough to have both. 100%. So I'm hoping that for like our children, we'll be able to do the same thing for them. Let them know, like, because it's nurturing, that small compact. Because I can imagine, Dad, for you and your siblings growing up, there was a lot of opportunities to... go against rules because there's just so many of you. So like an example would be to sneak out. It wouldn't be too difficult if there's 13 of you, if someone just kind of like, oh, you know, say to one of the other siblings, hey, make an excuse for me while I slip out. Whereas if it was us, because it's just the three of us and it's a small space, if one of us is missing, it's where is he? What's going on?
Go and get the belts from upstairs. I can't find it, man.
Well, really, it's not, even though there was so many of us, it still wasn't easy to sneak out because there's a roll call.
Okay, to be fair, that had the proper African upbringing.
Yes, there's a roll call. Do you know, I mean, growing up in Africa, you don't have to be told what you have to do. You know what time you need to get home, so you get home. So it's not a case of, I'm thinking about it. You just know I have to be home 2 o'clock. You're home 2 o'clock. Doesn't matter where you are.
I find it hard to believe though, Dad.
No, I'm saying.
You were not, 007 was not able to sneak out.
No.
I know. He signed an NDA.
I find it hard to believe.
It doesn't matter how tough things are. You still find a way. Because all you have to do is to wait for the roll call.
Yeah, once that's done.
And then you jump over the fence.
Yeah.
Or you wait when everybody's asleep, like what we kind of do sometimes. Wait when everybody's asleep, open the gates, and then take the my grandfather's car. We'll push it out of the gate. It's nothing, nothing happened. You just push it out of the gate. You don't start the car until you're outside.
Down the road.
Far down the road. Then you start the engine.
007, yeah, for sure.
Tactic.
For sure. Do you know, there's this funny thing that of being, growing up, being a kid, thinking that the adults know everything, how they, like, the adults are right. You know, your dad, your mom, and all these uncles and whatever, they're right. And I remember growing up after your mom had split up, especially in my teenage years, I had like an anger towards you, towards mom, towards the situation of you guys breaking up. And it was not until I started to get to about in my mid 20s where, you know, the penny dropped. It was like, wait a second. They're just people. In fact, at the age I am right now, they had two kids. And as I got older, I was like, wait, these people had three kids by this point. And I look at myself and I just look at like how life is. And then I try and think of that situation where it's like, all right, so this guy came to the UK 22? How old were you when you moved here?
Not even 22.
How old? 21?
Hey, you're going to start trying
to work it out, eh? He's trying to work it out.
Is he legal? That's why, yeah. That's why I asked that at the beginning, just to make sure.
So dad came here when he was 21. Okay, he's got one kid back in Africa, myself, and...
Before you were born.
So you came before I was born. So mum was pregnant with me and you came. Right. And it was the first time for you to come and live in the UK. Or right. Spend a long period of time in the UK. Had you come previously?
No.
Right.
Okay. Had you had been outside, yeah. Okay. To Germany.
Right.
Yeah.
And how long we have for...
You can see how the roots... You know?
Yeah, I know.
Full circle. Don't let 007 use Jedi mind tricks. Yeah.
To lead us off on track.
Derail off of himself onto me. Listen, we may share the same first name, but no.
So, that's 21. Come to the UK, okay? A young, handsome, black guy.
Janair.
He's got swagger about him, and you got your brothers around you who also have that same swagger as well. Like, women would have been crazy. Especially back then, you know, it's like, this foreign, sexy black guy. They would have been doing all sorts of things. And I you know, I'm 23, 24, and I've seen how I don't want this to be a case of, oh, white women love black guys. No, but there's very much this thing of... The black experience in European and let's say the Americas is we get sexualized.
Definitely fetishized.
We get fetishized. Perfect. We you're dating a black guy. He's got a big thing and all this type of stuff, right? And I remember growing up in this country, like people would want to be my friend and girls would want to date me and they didn't even know me, and I was like. You guys know, I was a super nerd. I loved reading comic books. I loved playing video games. So this whole other stuff, which, you know, mixed with parents splitting up and anger inside and trying to fit into school, I ended up being like a bad boy type of figure in school. But it never really was who I was as an individual. It was just me playing the role that my peers wanted me to be. And we grew up in Northampton at a time where, for me, there wasn't a lot of black people.
True.
Mo, I know as you got older, more came. So yeah, you were able to...
True.
There was three black guys in my year. There was three of us. We were all friends. There was four. Look at that. I forgot about one guy who I wasn't that close with. There was four of us in the entire year. So they had an idea of what a black person should be like. And as a kid, I just want to fit in. So I just played that role. But to come back to it, I completely understand for dad to come here as a young man to be tempted with things he's never seen before in his life. How that can wow, the pressure of that. But, you know, dad was still there for the majority of our younger years, moved us away from London so we could grow up in a safer environment. And it got to a point for me where it's like, you know, the penny dropped of, oh, this guy really tried hard. And even with the separation with mum and everything that went through and all the anger I had felt towards you, towards mum, towards the situation, it's like, dad never stopped trying, actually. And as an adult, I can appreciate what dad was doing, you know, because I have friends. In fact, the majority of all the friends I had in school didn't have dads at home. And if they did, no, I'm trying to think of one of my friends that I went to school with that had a father at home. One. I can think of one. And, you know, it's me saying I was a popular kid, so I had quite a few friends, fake friends or whatever, but I had quite a few. One of them had. And that it differed. And you could see the ones whose dads didn't do anything. And I have, you know, a really close friend of mine now. I won't say his name, but you guys know him. And I ask him now, like, how do you feel about your dad? And how do you feel about that whole situation? And the only thing he can say to me is, I don't know. I don't know this guy. I've met him in person about 2 to 3 times. Like, he's my dad, and like, we'll talk on social media or like text or whatever, but I don't have that with him. And it just makes me think, man, no matter what was going on between mum and dad and us not being able to see dad for whatever the reasons, and us, I can't speak for you guys, I'll speak for myself, and me sometimes being so angry at dad that I, you know, I wanted to turn dad away, dad never gave up. And for me, that really just made me, one, drop my whole like persona of and the anger and the baggage and all that. It just kind of dropped off, and I was able to then start building a relationship with dad. And personally, you know, I absolutely love the relationship I have with dad. I feel incredibly lucky that I'm able to have this. You know, I don't see dad every day now, but we'll talk. He'll come visit. I'll visit. And, you know, we're just teasing each other, sharing stories, me finding out more of, you know, who dad is, and dad finding out more about who I am. And I remember I had a conversation with Mo. Mo, I hope you don't mind. So this happened to me, and I got older, and I became more happy in myself and whatnot. And I remember I was visiting Mo when Mo was studying in Leeds. And I was talking to, you know, are you cool, dad? You know, making sure to see. Because at this point, I was starting to make the effort with dad in the relationship. And Mo, I saw that same anger that I had, I saw it in Mo. Do you remember that conversation?
Yeah. Vaguely, I remember vaguely what you was talking about.
And I remember saying to you, so I speak to Mo about it, and he was pretty much saying the same things of how he felt, which was similar to how I felt at that time. I was around the same age you was at that time. So I remember saying to you, like, you know, like, dad's is human, you know. Like, this guy's tried. I'm not saying dad's perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but are you able to point out a perfect person to me? You can point out many people who are not even trying. So I remember having that conversation with you, and then years later, I could, you know, it's in the person's persona. It's in a way a person speaks. It's in a way a person walks. I was able to see that weight being lifted from yourself as well. Perhaps it wasn't the conversation I had with you. Perhaps it was your own journey. You know, you can confirm that. But I was able to see it. And when I did speak to you about it, it was like, no, you know, I understand. Like, I'm older than dad. And dad had 2 kids at the time. I was like, yeah, crazy, right?
Yeah, I think understanding was the biggest thing for me. Obviously, when mum and dad had separated, I was very, very young. I didn't really understand it, to be honest. And at the time, because I didn't understand it, I felt, and dad was trying and he was making the effort, it felt like to me like it was normal. So, you know, I would be happy to go and do stuff with dad. I would always be keen to go and do stuff. I was
you
like,
were
yeah.
always keen.
I was
to...
very, very keen to do that. And it was like, it felt like it was normal and it was what I wanted to do. But I think as I was going through that, because again, and I don't know if Oz was in the same space as you, but because it felt like I was doing that by myself and it felt like I was the one that had to kind of push for that. It got to a point where it was like, okay, let me not be, you know, I'm the only person that's doing it. You know, my other brothers aren't really that involved. They have their own reason. I don't really understand why they have the reason or the feeling not to go. Maybe I should just stop trying. And then from that, I guess it was, the lack of understanding, because it goes back to the point you said, you know, our parents or you know, the people that we may see as, you know, that they look after us in our life or they bring us up, we see them as, you know, these figures that should be perfect.
Yeah, they have the answers.
And they have all the answers.
Yeah.
And I was like, but, yeah, I feel like he doesn't have the answers. Why doesn't he have the answers? He's supposed to have the answers. He's my dad. He's supposed to do this because he's my dad.
Yeah.
But then it was like, actually, no, he's a human, right? Maybe a lot. And I think this was when the penny dropped for me, that it was, there's certain things that I know I've experienced that I know, you know, you may not have experienced, you may, dad may not have experienced, but I can understand that because I've experienced it, right? There are certain things, especially, and this is my opinion or my view of it, there's certain things when it comes to being a father that, I guess, you know, it's labeled or we have the idea or conception that this is what a father should be, you know. I would be playing basketball and, you know, people will have their parents there and I'd be the only kid there without anyone coming to watch.
Yes,
and for me, it was like, okay, so this is what a father figure should be, you know, these types of things. And because of that, I think that's where the anger came from within me. But then I was able to understand, if you don't experience certain things, you're not going to be able to know what those things are or the outcomes of those things or the effects of those things. Yeah, and I just felt like it was not so much a dad thing. It was more of a, I also need to make the effort in giving him the opportunity to have these experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I would stop inviting him to games.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, maybe if he doesn't come once, you know, he's not a perfect person. He should have came the first time. I'm not going to invite him to any of the games. I just felt like that was a very closed-minded and childish way of thinking. And it was only detriment to our relationship. But yeah, 100% growing up now, and I guess I can look back, I understand why I went through that. I didn't understand the situation, but definitely after having that conversation with you, and I was able to kind of put it more in perspective, be able to understand more. I just think it helped me grow as a person wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
I was able to kind of have that perspective, and it broke down a lot of walls, you know, about the real meanings of life and how to have genuine relationships. And I feel like that's when even me and Mum came so much more closer. Because I always felt like, yeah, me and Mum were cool, but, you know, we're not like, we don't have a super close bond. Whereas now, I would say that Mum is 100% one of my best friends.
Mm.
You know, to be able to have those just genuine conversations where you could just be open and just really give what you feel and not have to think, you know, I have to watch what I say, or maybe I have to say what you're going to feel is the best thing for me to say. So, yeah, I think it just helped change my whole view on life.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm really interested because obviously we're still learning who you are because we've had that hiatus between us. But what was your take on the whole growing up with separated parents? And also, did you make peace with it or did you never have that? What's yours?
For me, it took me forever. Similar to what you guys are saying, it took me ages and ages and ages to really understand that they are human, both of our parents.
Yeah.
That they're not God, judge, jury,
executioner. Although, as a kid, I thought Mum was all three.
100%. I mean, that was one of the first things you said to me that I remember when I first came to see you out in Spain. That, I don't know if you remember us having that conversation. But when you said that, I was like, oh, he's also on his journey to understanding.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, 100%. 100%. Took me ages. And as you say, it's what, last year or the year before, that's when I really sat down to say, like, self-reflection, to be like, okay, you're at this point now. Whose fault is it? Or is there blame to be cast? If there's no blame, then try and understand the situation and then try and proceed forward. But to go back to how did I take our parents splitting up, do you know what? I'll put my hands up. Mommy's boy. Like, I didn't close my heart off to dad. I didn't. But in the same vein as yourself, I stopped making that effort and stopped allowing the opportunity because I was nice and comfy and happy with Mum. And when I saw Mum happy as well, especially when we would, in certain times, not completely annex him, but to shun dad, that would, in some ways, be a bonus points for Mum.
For Mum, yeah, for sure.
So for me, that was my main focus growing up. As long as, like, if we're focusing on just that relationship between our parents and everything, as long as mum's happy, then I think dad's going to be okay. I didn't feel any particular anger towards it. I felt a little bit of jealousy, for sure, because when Mo was making the effort, he was getting all the cool things.
He was getting all the cool stuff. He was getting all the cool stuff. Yeah, yeah.
So there was a little bit of jealousy there, but there's certain things that I still remember that me and dad did have our own sort of bonding moments and whatever. I remember this is Standards Barn, one of the first. Remember we lived next to that white family next door with the Sarah. Girl.
Every black person that lives in the UK.
I know, I'm like, how vague. I don't feel like Northampton. Standards Barn, but it's before Grandma moved to
Stockmead.
Exactly. Yeah. This one, yeah.
Stockmead, right.
So I remember, I might even be getting the house wrong, yeah, but dad came home from work. And I had a Game Boy, super old school, the one with like, before Game Boy Color, I'm talking about Game Boy, yeah. The big gray thing, you're holding it.
Yeah, for sure.
So as I'm playing, I can't remember what game I was playing, but dad came home with, I don't know where he got it from, the market, he got it from the shop, whatever. It came, just the cartridge itself, took it out of his breast pocket, handed it to me and said, yeah, go play RoboCop. That's one thing, honestly, I will never ever forget.
I remember the game.
I was just like, damn, this is the coolest thing ever. But yeah, so for me, I'm trying to take the bitter with the sweet and trying to understand how we can all move forward. And as we're saying, it's only a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, where I'm starting to really understand the depth of the journey it takes to view your parents as human beings, to realize that we're all doing the same thing. Really, we're just fumbling forward, trying to figure out what's the step not to take.
Yeah,
because that's all we're doing, trying our best. Like, even us with our young ones now, we're trying. We don't know all the answers. We aren't God, jury, executioner. Yeah. We're just fumbling, trying to make sure that these guys have as much knowledge and as many tools in their possession, so they can do 10 times better, or even one step better. That's a plus for me. We can wish for 1,000 steps, even if they make it one step better.
Yeah,
for me, that's super good. Super, super good. But yeah, anyway, mummy's boy. I was there for mum, back in mum. Obviously, for any ladies listening, not there now. I'm a man in my own right.
Welcome to the Sage of Three Paths podcast. We are three brothers who use this space to talk about a range of topics. Anything from politics, race, anime, and pop culture. Each giving our own perspectives and opinions. I'm the youngest, Mo Janna, also known as Junior Lamb.
I'm the oldest, Okello, but my brothers call me AJ.
Middle child, Oz, aka Wizard King.
I just remember when Mo is saying about, you know, obviously, yeah. At that time, Mo was the man.
Yeah.
You know, he's always called. Yeah, what are you doing? I'm coming this weekend. I remember we had a fallout, me and Mo. Okay? I think he will remember this, right? And you know, the good thing about falling out is for you to learn from that fallout. Okay? He had come down for the weekend. Think you remember you're gonna remember when we had a big fallout. I knew we had a fallout. When I tell this story, I always say, you know, mostly, okay, I'm gonna teach him a lesson. That's how I'll tell the story.
I'm that kind of guy.
Yeah, he says I'm gonna teach him a lesson.
I'm like, okay.
Because okay, he's the man. Come, you know. I remember he's been with me for the weekend, Saturday. He went to see his friend. He says, oh dad, can I say yeah. So around 6-7, he phoned me, said, oh dad, can you pick me up? He was somewhere in Western Favour. Okay? And I said, okay, I'll come and pick you up. So I drove to Western Favour. He's not there. And I called him, he said, oh, I'm by the college. Right?
How did you from one
yes,
place to another?
So he went by the college. And I'm driving around.
Sorry, just to say the college is about, let's say,
the Northampton
College. A 10, 15 minute drive away from Western Favour. Just for the listeners to know the gap.
So I'm thinking, okay, I've drove from home to Western Fayetteville. It's not there. He said, oh, yeah, I just come to, yeah, just meet me by the college. So I drove to the college. It's not there. By this time, my blood pressure started going up. Okay. Then he wasn't there. And then I'm calling him. He's not answering. Eventually, I answered the phone. He said he's down by the pub. What's the name of the pub again?
Lumber Tops Pubs.
That's the one.
Which is another further 10-15 minute journey from the second place.
Shorter than that. Shorter than that. So he says down Lumber Tops Pubs. So I drove down there. I still can't find Osman.
Mo, sorry.
I still can't find him. So I'm looking and I'm sitting in the car. I'm looking. Then I saw him come walking towards me. He walks nicely, slowly. By this time, obviously, I was on red. Because he's giving me the runaround. Okay. I was on red. So he came in the car, you're a dad. And I didn't even say you're right. I just bust. I said, right, I'm gonna have a word with that girl. I said, I'm gonna have a word. She's distracting you. You're supposed to be focusing on education. I'm going to say, rah, 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 rah. Obviously I wasn't gonna do it. I was on red. And yeah. I want him to know that, I mean, you gave me the runaround. You can't do that. So he didn't say nothing. I didn't say nothing. I just drove. I didn't get out of the car. But he knew I was not happy. Okay? Maybe I overreact. That's how I look at it now. So obviously we came home, we drove home, and you know, it's after the weekend, he went. And I think for the next nearly two months, he didn't visit me. Okay. So me and him will talk the weekend. So, no, sorry, Dad, I'm busy. You know, so he started becoming too busy for me. But then, at one time, the penny just, hold on a second, what's going on? So luckily, I pick it, I say, I see. I say, maybe. I need to be nice to this girl. I say, if I want my son back, I need to be nice to this guy. And I say, there's no way I'm going to threaten again. So the next time I actually saw Mo was at grandma's. And this girl was there. You know, like, hello, how are you?
To confirm, I
do remember that.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
It was one of them situations where you say you're somewhere, but you're not there, and you're running there. And because I eventually had seen Dad, I was like, okay, act cool and just walk. Because you've been running this whole time. You've been running this whole time hoping to meet him. And you could be like, oh, Dad, I tried to make it easier for you because I'm closer. Little did I know that Dad, when he drives, he's going to get to from A to B very quickly. He's not going to mess about. He knows all the back roads. He knows this way. I'm expecting him to just go the long way. There's traffic. I've got enough time to finish off my 007 business before I come and meet him. Little did I... Yeah, definitely, Dad. But yeah, I do remember that moment. And I remember at that time, I think it was a shock to me. That was the biggest thing, because I was like, I'm used to getting this from mum. I've never got this from you.
Yeah.
So, like...
Yeah. Like, I'm used to being in trouble with mum a lot, but there was only once I got in real trouble from Dad, and I never forgot it, and I was so scared. I was so scared the next day. I came downstairs in the morning, and I sat down, like, shaking, like, not knowing what to say. Dad comes in and goes, you're not going to say morning to me. I was like, morning, Dad.
It's like you made
apart from that, never did you get in trouble with Dad. Never. But Dad, now that you've heard how it was for us with how the breakup was and how we were feeling, how is it for you? Like, because for me, it was always thinking of if I put myself in Dad's shoes. But to hear it from the horse's mouth, how was that like? First of all, how was it like coming to the UK as a young man and a family back home? And all that.
It was good. You know, I mean, obviously coming from Africa, I mean, we all want to kind of, we look at this part of the world as an
opportunity. The land of Adam.
an opportunity, you know, for you to develop yourself and your family. And, you know, in the process, you know, whatever you're able to gain in terms of education, in terms of general knowledge, in terms of just self-development. So, yeah, it was cool. And for me, lucky, I already had siblings here. And they were doing okay, you know. So when I came, I lived in a house where there was, like you say, you know, five black men, you know,
yeah,
hot black men. Even within the community, our community.
You guys were the cool guys.
We were the cool guys. We were the guys that get talked about.
Mm.
You know, because we were not doing the norm. Like you say, you know, I mean, obviously, come back to doing the norm. We were not the guys doing the norm. We were not the guys that, you know, would go to work. We were all single. All of us.
You weren't single, Dad.
We were all single, technically.
You were technically single.
Technically single. Yes. We were all single. Okay? So we go to work. We don't have no responsibility. So all the money we earn, we go to shops and buy expensive clothes. You know, those days, I don't know whether you guys would be able to rewind. They had this drama program called Ellie Law.
No.
Yeah. And they dress these fancy suits and stuff like that. So we used to kind of, and it was, you know, there was a lot of black guys on that drama. So we used to portray ourselves like those. And then the norm that we didn't used to do, you know, obviously when you're in the community, they always do parties and stuff like that. We had to go to parties, we go to nightclub, which is not the norm as well for our community. So we used to do things like that. And among us, nobody, there's only one of us that had a driver's license. So come weekend, we'll hire cars and then he'd drive around. So obviously, just imagine growing up, you know, in this country, black man, a young from Africa, they expect you to just education. Yes. And then we were just there enjoying ourselves. And it was interesting. A lot of bad things get said about us, but, you know, the proof is in the pudding.
Mm.
Because obviously people will always try to criticize you, you know. And I think from then on, you know, journey, you know, go, a lot of things improve, there was a lot of things that I can look back now and think, okay, yeah. It was tough towards the end because eventually, you know, you start getting tired of a lot of things. And I was thinking, you were there, your mom. And, you know, she joined us. Mr. Londoner, you know, Osman came to the scene. You know, and, you know, when Osman was born, things were hard. Very, very hard. But again, you know, I think earlier on we were talking about a situation whereby, you know, you have to make a call to say, you take care of the little things, I take care of this, you know. So during those process, we got to a situation whereby we have to make a decision based on what is good for your child,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of us don't do in, you know, within the black community. Because I remember Osman, we used to take him to a childminder for Monday morning and pick him up Friday, you know, which was tough, really, really tough. Because imagine, you know.
So he would stay there for the weekday?
The whole week.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yes, that's what I say, you know, when Osman was born, things were really, really tough because we had to go to work. You know, so it was a case of Monday morning when we go in, I drop him off, and then Friday when we finish work, I pick him up.
Wow.
Yes.
Did you know that?
Didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, perhaps it's something that we've discussed or heard of.
Yeah.
In the past.
So yeah. So that's what we used to do. Drop him off Monday, pick him up Friday, and then, you know, obviously, you know, I mean, women think differently. Obviously, the kind of, you know, he's not well looked after. He's not this, you know, he's got rash, you know, or they only change him. You know, when childminder, they always have this perception. They only change him when we come in to pick him up and stuff like that. All the food you take, they don't feed him. And in the end, you know, I have to make a call. Say, well, this is the deal. You stay home and look after him. I'll go bring the bacon. So again, you come back to what I said. You get to a stage in life where somebody has to, you know, hold the bull by the horn. So we came to that decision where I said, okay, I'm going to go and work because you have to look at who is bringing in more money. It doesn't matter whether it's the man.
Or and the then, woman, yeah, yeah, for sure.
And then your mom decided to stay home to look after husband because it works out better financially for you too because you're not losing a lot of money. And then at the same time, it works out better for looking after your child. Mm. That's why I always say for us, the best thing that happened to us in terms of bringing you guys up is when Grandma joined us. That was the best thing.
Shout out, Mommy Sandy.
Yeah. That was the best thing. Because then, coming from a teacher background, it just make it easy for us. We didn't even have to worry about anything. So we had so much free time in our hand, we had more.
Well, so I completely understand that because in a way, I said G and I, we are trying for another child now, but to find the opportunity to, our second, my second child, with him staying in the same room as us in his crib, we don't have an opportunity for anything. Yeah. It never happens. So it's like, Hanzo, you don't want a sibling? Or I'm trying to bang this out, because, you know, and get it out of the way, and I don't need to worry about any more children. But
yeah, that's tough. So again, you know, if I come back to the separation, you know, I think prior to that, it was tough because I think what I learned from that, sometimes it's easy to say, when you're in a union, okay, you always have to remember, in a union, you're there for your happiness, okay? If it's going to work out, it will work out. If it's not going to work out, yes, somehow, where children are involved, it becomes a little bit difficult. But sometimes what happens, you cannot hold on to, put your happiness on hold, and then it causes more damage in the process. Okay, because I know for us, we tried to patch things out. Well, I'll speak for myself personally. I tried, because I get to that stage where no. I say, we're gonna continue. But then, you know, it wasn't gonna be
a healthy environment.
Yes, because you know, both sides have to be willing to try. But when both sides not willing to, then it becomes a little bit difficult. So yes, I mean, for me, at that time in my life, when it happened, at that time, I'd already retired. Kind of calm, you know, I just more family orientated now. Yes, was I very good when we were in London? No. I was young when I moved to London.
I can understand.
So when I end up having a wife, I was still young. I still have people that were still hanging around me. So moving to Northampton is like, okay, no, I need to focus on the family. So for that to, you know, for that not to work becomes a little bit difficult. So even when eventually, you know, the decision was made, and I think one thing that, like you say, you always have to keep fighting. I remember during this, after we separated, I moved to Milton Keynes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I moved to Milton Keynes.
So you moved to a completely different town, city.
Correct, completely different town.
Closer to London.
Because I just couldn't deal with it. The only way I thought I could deal with it was just to move away from Northampton.
Mm.
Right, and I moved to Milton Keynes. I think I spent about a month there. And I think, I'm going back. No, it ain't going to happen. I'm not going to run away. Because I realized I was running away. So I came back. And I've ever been around.
Mm.
Yeah, we've went through different difficulties. But, you know, that's such is life. You know, it has to happen. But if I always advise, you know, if it's not working, even if there are kids, if it's not working, you don't waste each other's time and the kids. Let it be. Que sera, sera.
Yeah, I mean, you know? It's a tough one because being a married man now, of course, I guess I'm still in the honeymoon period for my marriage. Mm. I mean, I've been with you for some time, 6 to 7 years now we've been together. I mean, we've been married for over a year. Yeah, that's about right. And because we had that friendship formed in the 5 years before, it's something we had discussed. It was like, no, if we're getting married, that's it. I don't care if one day you hate my guts. We're not getting a divorce. we're not going to do that. My parents divorced and I don't want to have my children to go through that. And I'm still very much of that thought now. Like, I can't imagine a possibility where her and I are unable to see eye to eye, or, because, no, of course we don't see eye to eye sometimes, but unable to work through things. I can't see it right now. And I understand it's the honeymoon period that I'm still in for my marriage. Her parents have been married for 30 plus years. And it's different because she's from the Asian community.
Mm.
So it's completely different in terms of what's culturally accepted and whatnot. But they did separate for some time and they got back together. And when they did separate, the effect it had on her very tight-knit family, she is aware of how bad it can be. So she's on the same mind as me. But I know for a fact now, my mother-in-law has this love-hate relationship with her husband, my father-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
She finds him incredibly annoying. Yeah. But if he goes for long periods of time, she misses him like crazy. And like, G and I will look at them sometimes and be like, we're probably going to end up like that one day. Like, you're probably going to hate my guts and I'm going to hate your guts. But we're not going anywhere. She's like, that's fine. If we can achieve that, that's a win. So I would like to think the possibility of separating doesn't happen, but of course life is life, anything's possible.
Yeah, true.
And on that note, I don't think you've introduced yourself, Dad. Would you like to let the people know
who they're talking to?
So. Yeah, who our guest was this episode?
Because not everyone can call you Dad.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone can call me Dad, or they can call me Dan. Well, for the listeners there, I'm one of the Janas, Mr. Mohammed Konkola Jane, and I'm father to Ozzy, AJ, and Mo. And I'm privileged to actually be invited to come into this podcast. Well, I wasn't invited.
No, you were blackmailed.
I was
blackmailed.
No, I was forced. 007 got 007.
Skills, but I have some of these skills for sure.
You know, some of the lyrics I wrote one time, because that name, 007, you know, one thing I wrote, I said 014, I'm two times better. Two times 007. Yeah.
Hey, Okello here. This section is a space where we'll be sharing short stories, creative experiences, and art. This week, I'll be telling you about the tale of Sengbe Per the Gallant. The tale of Sengbe Per the Gallant, part 4. After 2 months at sea, the Amistad was seized by the US brig Washington off the coast of Long Island, New York. Sengbe Per and the surviving African captives were arrested and charged with murder and piracy. With calmness and stillness, it comes to an end. We hope you found some gems and go away richer in soul and spirit. We're showing you the three paths of the sage. Your path is your own. Which path do you follow? Until next time.